Welcome back, everyone. I am Simone Deloach.
And I am Dennis Tardon, and welcome to The Six Box, where we talk about our lives within the six cultural constructs of this particular program. I am an old white man.
Yes, and I am a young black female.
And within those constructs, I want to talk about gender today. So this is the 19th of March in 2023. And have you noticed in the news that there has been a whole lot of news about the government coming down and wanting to restrict things like drag shows and transgender with parents and a lot. When you were studying to be a therapist, did you study gender? Did they and gender dynamics along that? What was that part of your studies?
Yes, it definitely was. Methodologies of learning how to be a therapist, the old practices really only focused on the heterosexual relationships. Mm-hmm. But my program definitely took the time to educate us on the various dynamics of what family could be, both in the spectrum of, you know, transgender parents coping with transgender children, same-sex marriages. So yes, that was intentional of my program to teach us that, because the world it's never looked black and white, right? And so as we step into this new phase of cultural issues, it's important to have a variety. But yeah, we definitely learned about that.
Can you see the backlash when we're talking about the thing that fascinates me about when we're talking about the transphobia and drag shows and all is that I see a lot of attention upon men dressing up as women, and that being actually against the law to have that and to have, I mean, it. And I'm trying to understand where that is, because I don't see the same dynamics about women dressing mm-hmm. as men, which they're called drag kings and right. drag king shows. But I'm not seeing anything along that line. So what is going on there?
Great question. It seems like a new uncomfortability. I think Americans have always been uncomfortable with it. But here's mm-hmm. the thing. Men dressing as women is not something new. We've done this for decades. Yes. You know, and if you take it back even further, right, there are practices within some of the Native American culture where that is celebrated, that is encouraged.
Exactly.
And so it's not something that I don't think America is new to. It's just interesting that it's being highlighted to the scope that it is today. So
yeah. I mean you can look back on Some Like It Hot, which is the Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon, who dressed up as women yes. and in order to be part of a show because they want to get close to Marilyn Monroe that they were doing. I mean, this is all part of it, but the fear of it, mm-hmm. the fear of it and coming up is just extraordinary, because I try to think about who we are. I mean, we have a physical body, right? We're born a particular gender. Most of us, I mean, there are some people who are hermaphroditic, but most of us are born to one gender or another. But my sense is that our personalities mm-hmm. are what could have a gender. Where do our personalities go along the spectrum? Mm-hmm. You know, do we skew one way or the other? And because that's something that when I was growing up, I did not at all identify with men or relate to men. I was born in 1948. So during that time, I felt just completely dissociated from what I saw as the cultural construct of what a man was. You know, that just wasn't me. I was more of a sissy boy, even though I was 6'4", and that I didn't like to fight. I didn't like the traditional. I was just not I much preferred, so I did not identify with that construct. Now, I didn't have anyone to say, well, perhaps you have something going on with you or some way to do it, because that wasn't even concerned, but it's my personality that I'm interested in as to that's where I am on the spectrum.
Right.
We think of where on the spectrum. And if I think about that, on the spectrum, I'm about 80% woman and 20% male as far as my personality is concerned. Now, I can understand, because I have friends who feel so out of their, that they were born into the wrong bodies, that they actually feel like that they want to change their bodies in order to conform, and they want to both dress and present as a woman.
Right.
That was never, you know, that, anyway, I wanted to talk about that and see what
have we asked the children what they think? Let me ask you this, Dennis. If we're so concerned about children being affected, have we sat down with a panel of diverse children from all cultural backgrounds, all ages, maybe in between the ages of, I don't know, 6 and 12? Mm-hmm. Have we sat down and asked them what they think about this particular adult issue? What do you think a child would say in relation to the uproar about drag shows? What do you think they would say?
Yeah, that's exactly what I would like to say, especially when they're having costumes and there's so many children can dress in so many different ways and have fun and express themselves. I just wonder what we would, if we did not have this cultural pressure, what would it look like? What would the children, how would the children both manifest and express themselves as they're growing up? Because we're going to have to deal with it, because politically it's going to be an issue this year. This apparently this is going to be one of the big issues. Do you, within the Black community that you have, how is the conversation around gay and transgender? Because my experience has been actually, it hasn't been. I have a very small cohort that I have talked with. But what has been your experience in general, as far as where's the conversation going within your family and friends, older and younger?
Well, sure. I'll definitely answer that. But answer my question, right? As a child, how would you answer that question? What is it? What is your ideas of drag shows? If you could go back into your childlike self, how would you answer that today?
Well, I grew up with a mother who was an actress, so I would see that as a costume. It's very funny that you should ask that. Is that there's a picture somewhere, but I don't have it, of me in drag at the third grade.
Wow, it would be.
I was dressed. My mother dressed me up as a character from a Goldilocks parody, and I was Granny Slyboots. So I'm in a little hat with a little veil over me, and a little hair. I'm in the third grade, just remembered that was my first time in drag.
It was fun. It allowed you to be creative. It allowed imagination. Right, which is what we want all our children to be able to do, right? This new age of children, right? Doctors don't have to be males. Nurses don't all have to be women.
No.
And I think, you know, if we were to branch out and allow the spectrum to be whatever you want to be, you be. Yep. Astronauts don't always have to be men.
Nope.
You know, just like somebody who loves to cook doesn't always have to be a woman.
Nope.
I think culturally, as Black men and women, we're learning. It's a slow ball curve, right? Because there's a culture around be a man, you know, the woman should have these roles, the man should have these roles. But I think that's due to being put in a box already in the first place,
exactly.
Right? We've already been boxed up by society. And so to try to keep those standards, we try to box ourselves. And so there was a photo or a video of a young boy He had a kitchen set, right? I think he had a grill set up, and he had his kitchen set, and then he had a couple other things. And just the comments, the uproar about the little boy in an apron serving his family barbecue and mashed potatoes was a big deal to our community. And it's heartbreaking. But yep. I think in the same way, why wouldn't we want our young men and boys to learn how to cook? Why wouldn't we want our young women to know how to operate heavy machinery? Let's expand. Let's grow. Let's not limit ourselves. So I think having a conversation.
Take me back historically, though, in in your family, in your culture, let's say from 15 to you're now 31, right? So that's about 16, 30. Yes. All right. So that's a 15-year span. Are you seeing an evolution there in the conversation that you would have around the dinner table, that you would have around? Are you seeing some changes there so that you can see that the group is growing as far as the mindset is concerned?
Yeah. Well, I'll take it back to just reminding you, like I, my experience as a young Black person has not been, I don't think, what society mainstreams as a young Black person having these conversations. My parents had no gender barriers. We all went outside to help mow the grass. We all went inside to help cook a meal, right? Majority of it was my mom and my sister, but you know, dad and I and brother helped prepare different things and variations of it. And it wasn't like I have to be in the kitchen hour. I have to be outside. It was a collective. So I don't see that. I don't see a difference. No. I think more so now, you know, with nieces and grandchildren and raising children up, you know, we challenge them to think outside the box and be more vocal about the variations, the differences of what they could be growing up and allowing them to feel the freedom not to limit themselves.
Yeah. What about the gay members of friends and family? How is that? How has that been accepted within your family?
Sure. You know, my mom likes to tell me, I mean, as long as you're not out here robbing a bank or harming people, I'll love you through and through and support. At the end of the day, us as a family, as the Deloaches, we want our family members to be happy. We understand mental health, and we understand substance abuse, and we understand the varieties of things that are after us if we don't take care of ourselves. And if we're limiting ourselves on who we choose to love, then that can create other problems. Exactly. And so I've grown up in a family where, you know, we appropriately give time to adjust. But at the end of the day, if you are operating out of love and if you're not harming anybody or robbing a bank, again, like my mom said, it's
well, that's a good that's a guideline that we can, you know, that we can go ahead and deal with. So this acceptance, this idea that we can all that we can be have some acceptance that just because someone is different from me. I was reading an article today about a column today in the Washington Post, and it was talking about how the white Christian nationalism is all about the loss of privilege. And because I'm thinking about this, and you know, when we talk about diversity and inclusion, where I see the challenge to diversity and inclusion has to be with, oh my God, if you are diverse and include, you're actually giving privilege to a certain group because they would get a preference. And that's where the big backlash is. But yet, by any standard, we're absolutely in a position of privilege. You know, that we white men are in a position of privilege because you just look at the numbers. Just look at the numbers where you have. And so within that sense of privilege, that's where the challenge comes. And so I don't know where I'm going with this. So help me out. Take me somewhere.
Yes. No, I've I had a conversation recently with a young female who left the job to go to another job. And one of her colleagues had made her aware that one of the reasons why she got the position was because they had to fit a quota. Mm-hmm. She's young Black. Mm-hmm. He is, you know, white male. And, you know, she had to make it be known, no, sir, I was qualified for the position because of my credentials. I am qualified for the position for all these other reasons.
You bet.
Do I just so happen to be white, Black and young? Yes. So take it as you wish, but your qualifications did not override mine. So therefore I got the position. And it's what's interesting is, you know, where is the threat? Why is it a bad idea to have diversity in the workplace?
Or let's take the opposite side of that. Mm-hmm, why mm-hmm. is it a good idea?
Well, I think we can get there, but if my audience is white men in particular, mm-hmm. I want to know why it's a bad idea, because I can't convince you that it's a good idea until I can hear you and your stance of why you feel that this is a threat. Same with the uproar about the drag shows. Why is it a bad idea? Give me the list. Who does it affect? And again, I want to see the panel of children that are in disarray because men are dressing like women, which is, I've seen these comparisons. It's like, but some of our favorite 90s movies and sitcoms were men dressing as women. Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Flip Wilson. I don't know mm-hmm. if you ever remember him, but he would play Geraldine. He would play mm-hmm. this character, General Geraldine, which was...
We've got Tyler Perry, Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. Exactly.
I see his face, but I don't see his name. But sure. But it's like we have all these different beautiful examples of men dressing up as women and having fun with it and it be comical. Is it not the same creativity that men who dress up as drag and women who dress up as drag are doing?
I love what you said about that, Simone, because what are we afraid of?
Right.
All right. What is the fear?
Yes.
All right. So here's the right. What are you afraid that the children mm-hmm. might think? What are you afraid? Mm-hmm. What are you afraid of mm-hmm. that they will suddenly what?
Right.
Because I'm asking about it because there's got to be an end game to it or you wouldn't want to stop it.
Sure. And I think it also, we can take that and look at the conversation around the type of books that we have in schools, teaching racism in schools, right? There's a exactly. fear about exposing children too early. Okay. But also, when will they learn? Because if they're not learning anything, are we setting them up to be successful if we're waiting until they're 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, and then they are exposed to all of this, right? Then it's a culture shock. Then we didn't do our job. Then we have not done a good job of moving them forward and making a difference. So again, tell me what the fear is. Are you afraid of more gay people in the world? Because to be honest, we're all on the spectrum.
All of us.
We're all on the spectrum. And gay people in the world aren't killing children in schools. Gay people in the world aren't, you know, mass shooting in churches, mass shooting at concerts. Gay people in the world aren't perpetrators and pedophiles towards yep. children. Let's look at, if you're worried about children and their safety and their lives, can we look at those things first? Because yep. I know guns kill children. I know individuals who aren't mentally stable are harming children. So again, let's reevaluate our focus. What's the
just
fear?
Just to be able to see, because especially if it is, the thing that bothers me most about it is that it's being used as a cudgel, as a fear cudgel, rather than having it be an actual discussion like we're having now.
Yes. Yes. I was watching something yesterday that really opened my eyes to the media. You know, we have journalists who are trained and who are educated in telling the truth. Journalists are truth tellers.
Yes.
Whether the truth is uncomfortable or whether the truth makes you feel good, they are truth tellers. And so The unfortunate thing is that media outlets are making the journalists as the bad guys, calling it fake news, calling it, you know, over-exaggerating of something, something, something. And so exposing the truth doesn't always make us feel good. And so if we're hearing that and then saying, oh, that's over, we're over-dramatizing it, that's fake news, they're not saying the full story, then what is a full story?
Exactly.
And how do we expect to tell the truth? What we're doing is rallying people up, getting their blood pressure up and running, getting their heartbeats, you know, palpating faster. But to what extent are we taking care of those people who are feeling riled up with the appropriate information? Exactly. If this is fake news, then what is real news? And then give me the facts.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons where I see the entire about us not talking about racism, because it will make the white children feel bad and feel guilty.
Again, show me the white children that feel bad and feel guilty.
You know, show me that. Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about how that they would feel bad, or make them feel like that they are less than.
And what's wrong with that? Yeah. Honestly, Dennis, if I hurt your feelings and you let me know, and I receive that as like, oh my gosh, like that wasn't my intention, let me do better. What's wrong with moving forward and growing in that way versus being ignorant and not growing at all?
Exactly.
I would rather you tell me that I made a mistake and that there is opportunity and movement to correct it. Mm-hmm. Then that's on me. And I can feel good about, one, having a relationship with somebody who cares enough to tell me that. And then two, an opportunity for a redo. So if there's a feeling of, I feel bad and we, you know, we don't want young white children to feel like they're responsible. Well, they're not responsible, but for what has happened, but they are responsible for doing better moving forward. And exactly. Why wouldn't you want that?
And why wouldn't I want to know? And this is where we go back to what we've talked about on previous episodes, is that we can hold two thoughts at the same time. We can hold thoughts that this is the greatest country, the idea of this country, the fact that you and I are both citizens of this country, and this experiment that has been that is going to have a more perfect union, and with all its challenges, with all its problems. At the same time, we went through the Trail of Tears and the absolute genocide of the First People that were here on bringing enslaved Africans to the United States, and keeping slavery during this time, and keeping Jim Crow, and doing these things. We can have both of those things are true. So now, with both of those things are true, now let's discuss them and say, okay, now how can we go forward? How can we look at here, look at what was in the past, what can we learn from it, and how can then we apply those lessons that we learned to going forward, to getting to where we want to go? Because we're not there. We're not there. If we were there, our prisons would reflect racially the population. If we were there, the economics would reflect the economic wealth within the communities would be more equal if we were there. Mm-hmm. We're not. So therefore, if we are not there, what can we do to make this a land of equal opportunity? And I'm thinking about, you know, like voting. Right now, we do not have equal access to the polls. Mm-hmm. When you're in an affluent, easy neighborhood, there are the times that it takes for you to vote are very small. In the inner city and in the more racially separated communities, and in the poor communities, the lines to vote are long, and the obstacles to vote, and it all it takes is just a little, you know, 2 or 3 percentage points, and you can keep your majority. So it's that's not the way it is. It's not that way now.
Dennis, we've done 6 episodes. This is our 6th one. We've talked all throughout the boxes of our 6 differences. as we come to a close of our show, mm-hmm. what have been some highlights and what have been some lowlights? Like, what are some things that you're still wanting to learn?
Well, there's so much that I want to learn, continue on, because one of the things that I mean, I'm really seeing where I can see that I am. One of the things that really came aware is that when I'm with you, mm. I'm much more concerned about race than. And I'm much more interested in wanting to talk about race. I don't know whether that's just my curiosity or whether or not that's my own interest or guilt or my own ignorance that this is the main topic about you. So I'm seeing you as a Black woman. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing this. So that is my attention and my focus. So it shows me, one of the things that has come to me is that I am very racialized. I'm very racially attuned. When I hear people who say, I don't see color, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. Right. I see color a lot. I see color a lot. One of the things, that's something that I've come to learn. I've also learned that I have, I mean, I've learned a lot on the show, is that a discussion show is very different from an interview show. You've had to really help me to get into conversation rather than being my default space as an mm-hmm. interviewer is to constantly go ahead and pepper you mm-hmm. With questions. So that's been a challenge and a learning and an opportunity. And I feel that I really want to learn more about what being an old white man and being I'll be 75 in April, and to be able to feel that experience mm-hmm. and to say, well, what is this like, and mm-hmm. how can I remain relevant? Because I'm very interested in being relevant, whatever that means, mm-hmm. is, you know, still be a part of this, which is why I wanted to tag with you, because you are, I see you as the embodiment of relevance. You're beautiful, you're brilliant, you're really a person who is of consequence, as I see in this society. So I figured, you know, I was telling my friends, I was going and my consulting producer Manuel, I said, yeah, I'm tagging myself to Simone. There it is. So it's like the reflected glory that I get.
Yes.
So those are the things. That's what I've been learning. What about you?
Yeah. Oof. I have learned a different voice with my hat. So I walk into a room and automatically people can see who I am, right? However, when I open my mouth, I think I take a lot of people by surprise. I've learned that. And when I open my mouth to say something, right? And so what I've learned here with you is that I can respect an elder, but also have a different respect for myself, to where we are sharing the same space. I can honor you. I can see you as who you are, both age, gender, and race. And I can use my voice to step into a space next to you versus behind you or in front of you or on top. Like, I can rock next to you, right?
Oh, God, how beautiful. Because I've noticed that. Mm-hmm. I've noticed over the series of shows, you being willing to push back to me mm-hmm. more. It's a subtle thing, but it's a subtle about coming out and owning this space and owning this space as an equal, as we're both mm-hmm. in there. And that's what it's felt like. That's astonishing, because that's what I felt.
Yes, thank you. Well, and with your insight on Blackness, I think it's challenged me to accept my Blackness even more so than I already have, right? I have family in Michigan, I have family in Texas, I have family in Louisiana, I have family in Alabama, I have all have a different variety of family, and our experience as Black people are different across the board. And so, you know, growing up in a space where I talked too white, or I wasn't Black enough, sharing this with you and being challenged by you, I have learned to accept my Blackness and my Black experience a little bit more.
Yeah.
And as I step into a professional space, I can bring what I bring to the table is of value. And even if it's with a Black person that doesn't have the same experience as me, I can sit with them and learn and grow while also teaching and infiltrating knowledge into them as well. So I've kind of set in my Blackness a little bit differently. Yeah, it's empowering.
Empowering indeed. Thank you, Simone. Thank you for these 6 shows.
Yes.
I look forward to getting the opportunity to continue to find ways that we can connect and communicate along. But thank you for exploring these 6 boxes.
Thank you, Dennis.
All right. And thank you, everybody, for coming along with us on the journey. I hope you learned as we have learned. And I am so grateful. And thank you, Simone.
Thank you, Dennis.
And we'll see everybody again.
That's it.